Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bum in the Bloom, episode 168. Coming at you on a Tuesday night. So that means Bloom Board time. We're talking some over and underperforming hitters based on BABIP and home run to fly ball. We're going to talk about some news, some nonsense, and so much more as we usually do here on the Bum in the Bloom podcast. But first, you can find me on Twitter at BDIntric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing good, man. Doing good. Kind of in a weird spot, weird time of the year where like I'm ramping things down from like 2024. So I just wrote my last speculator for HQ, Baseball HQ earlier today, while also sweating the hell out of some leagues here. You could see me before the show looking at every Shota Imanaga pitch, sweating that out and venting over good starts, bad starts, and IL stints, which we'll talk about. But then also ramping up for started some baseball forecaster work for 2025 already. So it's like I'm actually entering one of the busier times of the season, kind of right after the season ends. So I don't know, man, just like all over the board, but that's September as usual, and honestly wouldn't trade it.
Nope, that's what we do in these parts. It's a fun time of the year, and the fact you're already on the 2025, I'm guilty of already starting to look ahead. I know on some other shows I've been doing, we've been talking 2025 because that's just what there is to do this time of the year, or just get depressed about, you know, blown streams and other fun stuff in those regards. It is the dog days of the season, but it's fun. We're cracking on here. Let's talk about some news and notes real quick on this one. Luis Castillo injured his hamstring Sunday, left the game, got imaging on Monday. Tuesday, Castillo hits the IL with a hamstring injury. Thus, his season for fantasy at least comes to an end, Ryan. Takes the best five-man rotation in baseball down to probably one of the best four-man rotations in baseball. What's your thoughts on this one besides dropping Luis Castillo?
Yeah, you got to drop Luis. I believe this is the first missed start out of Gilbert, Castillo, Kirby, and Bryce Miller this year. So, again, as I lament almost every week, the waste of this awesome and healthy Seattle Mariners rotation, at least until now. Castillo is a drop, unfortunately. I'm guessing Emerson Hancock will get called up. He was the guy when Brian Wu was in and out between throwing gems and getting injured seemingly every week earlier this summer. Not interested, I don't think, in Emerson Hancock, though. We are playing matchups at this point. Hancock would face Texas this coming Saturday, at Texas again next week. So that would be, you know, your fab decision. And then who knows, the final week of the season. So not too interested in one Emerson Hancock.
Nope. You stack against Emerson Hancock if you can, folks. That's kind of how this game gets played. But yeah, bummer to see, but hamstring injury, hopefully just something minor, which it should be. And we get the full Luis Castillo experience once again next season. The New York Yankees finally did it, Ryan. Of course, it was Monday, and we've been saying every week in Fab, speculate. Jason Dominguez should be up. He's destroying AAA, so on and so forth. And Aaron Boone kept giving every reason while somehow Alex Verdugo was a better option in the outfield than Jason Dominguez. But on Monday, the Yankees made it official, calling Jason Dominguez up to the bigs. He started in center field on Monday night, started in left field on Tuesday night. We were talking before the show. They said they weren't going to call him up until he gets to play every day. Well, at least he's played 2 days in a row. So what's your thoughts on Jason Dominguez, who was widely available entering this weekend? And if we look now, he's still only 34% rostered in OC. So there's another big name coming at us this weekend.
Yeah, another big name. With no money to be spent, and also the caveat is we have no idea how anybody is going to do over the final 2 weeks of the season. That's just September baseball. But if you have the bullets, if you have the money, might as well spend it on Jason Dominguez if you need it. Kind of ironically, I think Alex Verdugo homered on Monday Dominguez made his debut. But that was just kind of funny. I do agree with you that at least for as much as we can't project these guys over a 2 week stint, I agree that Dominguez should at least play every day. And you get that everyday playing time from a prospect of Dominguez's ilk and what he's shown at AAA. You know, he could do nothing for 2 weeks. He could be great, but I know that's not the analysis that folks want out there. It's just projecting 2 weeks is impossible.
Yep, it's very tough. He plays every day. We're good, but otherwise just kind of stand back on that one. So see where that goes. Michael C. jumped in the chat here. There's a little Pablo is fully back, win number 15. He had some unearned runs today, which helped.
He had not quite the Mackenzie Gore unearned runs. I think gave up seven, but only two were earned, something like that. That was
pretty impressive, yes.
Pablo gave up four, but none were earned. Pablo Lopez officially tonight is below a four ERA on the season. Approaching 200 strikeouts, 15 wins, bunch of Ks, good whip. Turns out not to be that bad of a season for my guy, for Pablo.
Well, we shall see if that continues on, because it's been pretty, pretty good, as you've mentioned. In the chat here, Joe G has a question. Will Joey Cantillo get another start this weekend? Cantillo's been horrific this year, but was amazing on Monday against the White Sox, which take that with whatever grain of salt you want. I think it was 7 shutout, 10 Ks in that one. He's technically in line to face Tampa, which would be amazing. But that's not 100% guaranteed. So what's your thoughts on Joey Cantillo this weekend versus Tampa, if he gets the start?
Yeah, I would think he gets the start. I still think it's pretty shaky for all the reasons that you just mentioned. Hell of a start his last time out. But unless you're in 15 teams or deeper, I wouldn't be going there.
Yep, would not be rocking that one. Speaking of rocking it, Kumar Rocker of the Texas Rangers, set to make his professional debut, in the major leagues at least, for the Texas Rangers this Thursday. He'll get the start, and he's been filthy this year, Ryan. Sub one ERA between AA and AAA, all the strikeouts, not even that many walks. It's been beautiful. What's your thoughts on this one? Because I'm never rarely a start the prospect in their debut start, but this late in the year, you know, is this something you'd be interested in, especially in a matchup that features the Seattle Mariners?
I mean, if you can pick up Rocker, I absolutely, you know, not to make the joke that the Mariners, you know, lineup is AAA, but it's probably not too far off. So yeah, Rocker has been unbelievable in a limited stint this year. I think absolutely worthy of a pickup at Seattle, and probably would go versus Toronto. I think that's the question, is like, is Kumar Rocker, in terms of FAB coming up this coming Sunday, maybe makes two more starts if he's even in the rotation. I think a lot depends how he looks on Thursday. So we don't really know Texas's plans. It's kind of up in the air, especially with DeGrom coming back. I'm sure you're there. But yeah, I mean, numbers look great. Just said we can't project anyone over a two-week sample, but Kumar Rocker, if he does go Seattle, then Toronto, then at Oakland, is what the schedule would align. I mean, you can't really ask for something better than that.
Yeah,
so
it's pretty darn good. Yeah, right now Rocker slotting in. It goes DeGrom Friday, Scherzer Saturday. Six-man rotation for this week, but then if they go five-man, Rocker's the odd man out. I think they go six to just, you know, get DeGrom and Scherzer extra rest to get ready for whatever they need to get ready for. Time will tell on this one, but we should have a better answer come even after a start, probably on Thursday, if not on Sunday, on what we're doing with Kumar Rocker, because stuff's been great. Former top pick with the Mets, didn't quite make it to do a contract with the Mets, re-entered the draft, and then the Texas Rangers took their chance, injuries also, but got the job done now. All right, this one kind of stung for some people looking for saves and maybe deeper leagues or even shallow leagues. Ben Joyce hits the IL with a shoulder injury on Tuesday. He says he'll be back to later to finish the season. He's off the fantasy teams for now, though, folks. So what's your thoughts here, Ryan? How do you think the back end of this? Like, Jose Suarez got a 3-inning save on Monday.
Oh, God, did he really? Yeah, 49 pitch save. Jose Suarez, man, that was my boy last year.
Detmers goes 6, Suarez goes 3 for the win over the Twins. Like, write that one down.
Yeah, see how that feels. So I can say with quite confidence that Jose Suarez is probably not the guy in Los Angeles. I don't, the timing of the Joyce IL placement was brutal, because the Angels played Monday night. Joyce like mysteriously didn't pitch, and then it was ultimate IL on Tuesday. So you pretty much take a zero there for the week. I don't know. Roster Resource has 5 different guys listed as closer right now for the Angels. One of them is your boy, Hunter Strickland. I mean, honestly, that might be the guy. Earlier. I mean, he got chances before. So if I had to bet on one, maybe it'd be Strickland, but I don't, you know, A, I don't know how many saves there are to go around, and B, is there really much skill here?
Yeah, I wouldn't get too excited on this one, to say the least. I think there's other places to throw a dollar here and there, unless you're really, really desperate for saves. See how the rest of the week plays out on this one. Anthony Rendon also goes to the IL with an oblique injury, ending his
season. Just coast. Yeah. Just coast, man.
Well, it was great because Monday, he missed Monday's game with a back soreness, and then Tuesday, he's on the IL with an oblique injury. So
Rendon just checked the clock. It's about 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon and at this part of the season. And, you know, we're at the weekend pretty much.
Yep. He went, season's over, boys. I got some, the heat wave's done. Time to go chill at Disneyland or something and see where the rest of the time goes. He's going full Jason Day on us right now. Ronaldo Lopez of the Atlanta Braves left his start early, velocity down, complaining of a shoulder issue, going to get some imaging done. This sounds like I tweeted it, and I hope people understood the joke behind, like, the kind of tongue-in-cheek that I feel like we're on borrowed time anyways with Ronaldo Lopez, like innings-wise and everything. We kind of already got more than I think we bargained for, but I don't think we're going to see much more of him this year.
No, and it does call into question next year. And I made this point with Justin Steele. What if we don't see Justin Steele again? What if we don't see Ronaldo Lopez again? And we have this huge inning spike from someone going from the rotation to, or sorry, from the bullpen to the rotation, and then B, ending the season with a shoulder problem. I think that somewhat tanks Ronaldo Lopez's draft price, at least early in 2025 drafts. And I believe Lopez was taken.
He was the last pick.
Oh, he was Mr. Irrelevant in our draft. Wow.
And I remember she took it a bunch. She's like, she wasn't 100% sure of it. And a few other guys in the draft, I know I was looking at him for a couple of rounds. A lot of people were kind of didn't know what to do with Ronaldo.
If this is what we think and we don't see Ronaldo again, I do wonder if Grant Holmes would come back into the Atlanta rotation. Could be interesting. Now, Grant Holmes has great skills, pitched well out of the bullpen, has pitched well as a starter in the limited stint that he did have. But I believe Grant Holmes's last two appearances have both been under 30 pitches. So again, end of the season here, you may only get, if it is Grant Holmes, you may only get 2-3 starts. And of those, I don't know how many he can go 5, but just keep an eye on that. If Grant Holmes is either has like a longer outing this week, I think could be an interesting fab pickup in terms of the skills that he would bring. I don't know what his matchups would be. Looks like at Miami. Oh, it'd be a two-step next week. First, the Dodgers at Miami. And then who knows the end of the season, but maybe Kansas City. So Grant Holmes is somewhat interesting if he can stretch out.
Well, here's my guy that I think could be in play also is AJ Smith-Shawver. He's been down there in AAA.
Yeah.
It's been 0 earned runs in 3 out of 4 outings of late. Struck out 11 in his last start, 7 innings in that start. So he's fully stretched out. So if it goes back to the whole, like you said, Grant Holmes has only thrown 30 pitches in his last couple. Smith-Shawver's fully ready to rock and roll. He's had, you know, 4 earned runs or more in 2 starts, 0 and 3 of the 5. So pick your poison, but the skills are there, and that's the guy they wanted way before we even knew who Grant Holmes or Schwellenbach were. AJ Smith-Shawver was a dude, so he's another guy. I wouldn't be surprised if we hear his name in the next few days surrounding Ronaldo Lopez injury as well. Kyle Schwarber. Just something to monitor. He left the game with elbow discomfort. He apparently hyperextended his elbow, but the manager for the Phillies, Thompson, said he's going to put him in the lineup for tomorrow, and we'll see before the game how he feels. So he's not too worried about it.
He's a little backwards, but
yeah. That's the way I see it too. But it's one of those look for the underdog alert saying Kyle Schwarber scratched from lineup Wednesday is what I'm expecting to see. But apparently it's not serious enough to already think, you know, imaging and IL stint, but just something to keep an eye on with the Schwarbombs, who I think he tied the record for home runs by leadoff hitter with 14 today, or I think he tied the record. It was pretty impressive stuff.
Hitting 250 this year, which, speaking of impressive stuff, 250 average over 619 plate appearances for Kyle Schwarber. That has been quite the improvement from 197 last year. 5 bags, 34 homers. Awesome season for
Mr. And it's like Schwarber. The whole question is he kept falling in drafts because we thought the batting average would hurt you.
Yeah.
Now that 250 with 40 plus bombs and what he does that's like second round worthy all of a sudden. Like out, like he's stealing a couple bags even. Like it's the stat line is pretty good, which makes another fun draft discussion later on what to do with Kyle Schwarber for 2025. Okay, so there was Scott Burks and Schwarber set the record tonight. I didn't know if he tied it or set it. So it's his 14th game this season, leading off the game with the bomb. It's pretty.
And Burks is somewhat reliable. I think we can trust.
Well, and then Stephen Crawford even said,
"Here we go." Stephen Tuesday, certainly reliable. Yeah,
14th leadoff home run of the season, set a new MLB record during the Phillies game. Yep, beautiful. There it is. Fun stuff there with the Schwarber bombs. But you know what else is fun, Ryan? Tuesday nights, bloom boards. So. What do you got for us, my friend, as we're in the dog days of getting everybody to the finish line here? What do you got for blue boards?
Really sweeping the nation. It's like Thursday night football, Saturday college football, Sunday football, Monday night football, and then Tuesday night, you know, it's bloom boards. So we're making inroads. What we're doing here is this is a little bit of an eye towards 2025. I think, you know, we do have our Fab show every Thursday night, so we will continue to kind of prep and get that kind of weekly look over these last 2 weeks. But this is more of a kind of a longer view type thing and starting to look towards next year. What we're looking at here for the YouTube crowd, for the video crew, are two things that we cite all the time on this show. Two hitter skills called BABIP and homer to fly ball rate. And some general background on this. BABIP is your batting average on balls in play. And your league average on that is like 300. But each hitter sets their own personal BABIP baseline. So if someone like Tim Anderson was always the case for this, someone who like always you would think hit for a high batting average and it always kind of looked lucky, but it was always a high BABIP. Tim Anderson was always like around 350. But he was always that way. And then you've got guys like we just talked about Kyle Schwarber, someone who hits a ton of fly balls, not the fastest guy in the world, consistently has a low BABIP. So each hitter sets their own BABIP. And as that fluctuates over the year, it can greatly influence batting average. So that's what we use BABIP for, is to say, like, do we think this batting average is legit or not or whatever? So kind of use it in tandem with strikeout rate. Same deal with homer to fly ball rate. It's kind of like your BABIP for home runs. Each hitter establishes their own home run to fly ball rate. League average homer to fly ball is right around 11% this season. And again, each hitter establishes their own. So like Aaron Judge is going to have a super high homer to fly ball rate. Nico Hoerner is not. But yeah, league average right around 11%. So what this is I took the hitter's personal BABIP and homer to fly ball baseline from the last three seasons. And I threw that next to what they're doing this year, 2024. And so in typical kind of bloom board fashion, we have the risers and we have the fallers. So our risers are guys that are ahead of their baseline in both BABIP and homer to fly ball this season. And then on the right side here in red, we've got the opposite, guys who consistently had a better baseline and are not meeting that this season. And so I think what we want to talk about tonight in the show is, like, our research at Baseball HQ, a lot of research shows, in general, people will fall back to their personal average. So if you're way above or way behind, this is that term called regression, Bubba, that you like to use.
Positive and negative. It exists, people.
Positive and negative. It is the in the aggregate, hitters will fall back to their personal average. But what we want to talk about tonight is that the case for all these guys? Kind of dive deeper on not every single hitter that I've got listed here, but on a bunch of these guys, and just kind of take a deep dive and see what we think. So that's the general thing for the show, is showing guys who have vastly overperformed their personal baselines this season, and then those who have vastly underperformed this season.
All right.
Hope that makes sense.
Well, it might set us up for some fun debates. So it's pretty good in this regard. And it's going to be fun because there's some really interesting names, guys that like, yeah, this guy's crushing it. And some also like surprising guys that throughout this season, either on the Tuesday show or the Fab show, we've mentioned, and either one of us might agree or one of us might scoff at the other person for mentioning said name. And it's interesting to look at these, positive and negative regression candidates here, and might back up some of those scoffs. We shall see. But we're going to start at the top here with Marcell Ozuna, who, you know, last year had the monster season. Put up 40 home runs, 100 RBIs, hit 274. Things are great, but past, you know, over a three season sample, 269 BABIP. This year, 362. That's a massive jump. If you look back to 2020, he had a 391 BABIP, but for the most part, he sits around, below 300, except for early in his career, let's put it that way. And the home run to fly ball has skyrocketed also from 19% to 25%. So, Ryan, what are we thinking here on Marcell Ozuna? He'll also be 34 next year, which eventually, father time wins. We know this. So what are we thinking on Marcell Ozuna?
I take this as, and this is as someone who I drafted Marcell Ozuna in the fourth round of our too early 2025 draft, end of the fourth round. To me, what this looks like is this is Marcell Ozuna hitting 304 this season. I don't think that has a chance in hell next year. So I think, and that's really what the BABIP component of this is basically Marcell Ozuna is 100 points higher this season than he has been over the last three seasons. That just screams that it's going to come back. So maybe Marcell Ozuna is like a 270, 275 hitter. That's the part I'm somewhat worried about. That's still pretty good. I'm not really, honestly, when I look over on the power part of this equation with the homer to fly ball, I'm not that worried with Marcell Ozuna because I look at the underlying skills here with Ozuna, 16% barrel rate each of the last two seasons. I would actually argue that he underperformed home runs last season. 66 barrels last year, 62 barrels this year. I think Marcell Ozuna is a stud, and I don't think the power is going to fall back at all. I think this is a 40 home run hitter with what should be a better Atlanta Braves lineup next year. I think that'll help Ozuna as well. So yes, Marcell Ozuna is highest on this list for overperforming. I think it's almost all entirely batting average. I think that 300 is going to come down fairly significantly next year.
Yeah, I think that's fair. The batting average is definitely there, and hopefully this Braves offense is better next year, kind of what you're saying there. So I mean, he might be able to pad some stats and maybe get better opportunities to him, even more home runs, all things considered in that lineup. So interesting spot, to say the least. Michael C. says, was that before or after Rooker? I believe Rooker went after Marcell Ozuna. So thinking in hindsight.
Well after, Ryan, yes.
Yeah, like round 10. yeah. Let me see what Patrick Davitt had on that one, actually. If you were to sit back now, the old Captain Hindsight, which is always fun, Ryan, would you rather have fourth round Ozuna or 10th round Rooker?
In hindsight, I'd rather have 10th round Rooker.
Yeah.
And same position, neither, so UT only.
That's why it's a fun comp, all things considered. Two guys that are probably quote unquote overperforming these certain peripherals. So,
and Brent Rooker's not on this list because his power has been pretty steady, but that dude's batting average, he is not a 300 hitter like we're seeing this season. I think Brent Rooker, if you want to talk about buying someone at their absolute peak value, that might be it. Sacramento Park aside, but yeah, that, anyway, he's not on this list, but yeah.
You know who is on this list, and it's fitting that he has a home run to fly ball increase, is Paul DeYoung.
Your boy here, man. Here
we
go.
This is one of the ones where I got a lot of scoffing when I mentioned this guy.
Is he still on your tout team?
Yeah, I wish he was. Early in the year, I dropped him and then okay. Disappeared. I wish I still had him, but someone else got him because I was, this co-host friend of mine said this guy's horrible, and he was, so it's fair. But then he goes to Kansas City and starts raking. Dude's got a 288 BABIP, but a 232 batting average. That's always entertaining to me when the batting average is so far below the BABIP. But a lot of it's just because all he does is, hit strikeout or hit home runs. 24 home runs this year. It's third best of his career. I'm pretty sure it'll be second best by the time the season's over. Increase from 234 is the usual BABIP to 288. Ryan, what are your thoughts here? Because I already know where you're going with this, and I'm not going to be able to argue it.
Yeah, I mean, plus like Paul, I mean, eight playing time too. Like Paul DeYoung's not a good real life player either. So this is a guy who strikes out over 30% of the time. So even with this like massively inflated for him BABIP, Paul DeYoung's still hitting 230. I mean, this is a guy the last three seasons, 197, 157, 207. There is no batting average here. I'll give him some, some props for the power, but that's all. I mean, that's all he's got. So yep. A good year for DeYoung. I don't think the skills are there, and I don't think the playing time will be there unless he latches on like the Tigers or maybe Whites. We'll go White Sox.
Stick with the Royals,
or just stick with the Royals. We don't want to offend. Hey, we have a couple loyal Royal listeners.
Well, the Royals have a good young lineup. He could actually fit in there and do just fine, all things like he's doing right now. He's playing 130 games this year between the White Sox and the Royals. That's the second most in his career. Also, something he's only 30, though. Only 30. I'll give him that much.
I would have thought he's like 35, 36. That also is an example, 5,700 of players on bad teams getting playing time. So
Yep. There'll be plenty of the White Sox aren't going to be any better next year. So he's probably already a better option than most players involved in that situation right now. All right. Jock Jams, Jock Peterson. We've talked about him many times. A lot of people have talked about Jock Jams, but he even went deep again on Tuesday evening. He's got 21 homers on the year, hitting 280. His BABIP has gone from an average of 286 to 330 this season. That is the highest of his career, Ryan, which says a lot about Jock Peterson. And the home run to fly ball has followed from 15% to 22%. Now, this is kind of a tough one because he's taking advantage of right-handed pitching. They have him in the best-case scenarios to succeed. Now, is it likely he still achieves at this level? Probably not. But does he revert back all the way? I could see an argument against it. So what's your thoughts on Jock Jams?
I just think like, and we kind of say this every Thursday when we go through our hitter schedules and we at the top, Arizona. And like every week, it's like, Arizona gets like four righties. So it's like an okay week to start Jock Peterson. I think even with this kind of, like you said, career high BABIP, probably a career high homer to fly. I don't have his entire career in front of me.
I'll pull it up. Right
even here. With those being at or near career highs, this is still someone, I say only, he's hitting 280 with 21 home runs. Like that's 22 if you count tonight. Like that's not really that great. You know, in terms of like a full season production, if that's your career high in terms of skills. So like Jock Peterson's useful in spots, very useful in daily leagues, useful streamer, but it's not someone who I can really rely on in weekly leagues, week in and week out. The playing time's just not there. I don't think that changes either.
It's his fourth highest home run to fly ball of his career. So he fluctuates very well. Like last year, 13.3%, 18.3, 13.7, 22.6. He's all over the board on this. So,
right. Yeah,
his career average is 19%, if that helps anybody out in that one. All right, not a whole lot to discuss here. I think it's Bobby Witt Jr., who, BABIP's gone through the roof this season, and that's followed with batting average. But we're talking about 24-year-old stud. He's going to go 30-30 for the second straight year. Continues to improve all over the place. Like, I'm not going to say this is not who the guy is. Like maybe the average doesn't say this high, but skills are pretty ridiculous with Bobby Witt Jr.
Yeah. And I think the point there's not too much to say with Bobby Witt, but I think the point, I think you'd agree with this, Bubba, is like, and this is something you have bestowed upon me as I learned from you in this podcast. That's is
amazing. Clip that.
Especially with these young guys, like we need to have an open mind and say these guys can get better and that they're not just going to regress back to like a projection. And Bobby Witt, I want to use him as the example of that jumping off point, is to say Bobby Witt maybe he does fall back to his quote unquote career norm, but this is like a young stud prospect pedigree through the roof. Why can't he take this even further next year? And that's something I think that's been a weakness in my game. It's kind of treating these younger guys with kind of that old man mentality of this guy's going to fall back to his norm or his projection, when really you can push new norms when you are 25, 26, hell, even older. But that's my sermon with Bobby Witt and those types of players.
Yep. I'm pushing new norms every day, not saying they're good norms. I'm pushing new norms every day. So it's always possible as you get older. Michael C says Witt has a lower K percentage and higher zone contact than Juan Soto. Let that register for a second. A higher barrel percentage than Vlad.
Wow. Wow.
Like, that's Good pull. That just shows how good Bobby, like, he's just cursed that Aaron Judge is doing Aaron Judge things this year.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive. All right. Here's a fun one, which you kind of would expect to be on this board, is Jerkson Profar. And it's a guy that really he's had a rough recent go, but overall still having a great season, all-star season, Jerkson Profar. Average BABIP's 273. It's up to 296 this year. Average home run to fly ball 7%, up to 14%. And just to your Jock Peterson comment, 14%. It's his basically third best of his career. He's had a couple good home run to fly ball years. But what's your thoughts on Profar, who he's been up in this 296 BABIP a couple times, but for the most part, he's hanging around 270.
Well, and he's like older now. He's 31. Next year will be age 32 season for Jurickson Profar. Like, I will fully admit, I got this dude completely wrong. I did not believe the early surge was skill supported at all, and it wasn't. However, in season, the skills have gotten better for Jurickson Profar, especially in the second half. I think we did some kind of Bloom Border show that exposed that. So I honestly think Jurickson Profar is going to fall back hard just because his age, 29 through 31 seasons, which is what we're looking at here. That baseline is just so bad, and he's older. Like, I don't know. I don't think this is like a Bobby Witt thing to where he can establish these new levels in his early 30s. Like, that could happen. I could be wrong, but I can't buy into what Jurickson Profar did this year. It's been a hell of a year. Jurickson Profar was the best 2024 hitter not taken in our first 11 rounds of our meatball draft. I think in hindsight, he should have gone in those first 11, but maybe the last couple rounds in there.
Yeah, back into that first chunk of picks would have been fair for Jurickson Profar. We'll see where that cookie continues to crumble. Tyler O'Neill, this is a fun one because been hurt a lot this year. Stop us if we've heard that before with Tyler O'Neill. But when he's been healthy this year, he's actually produced. Unlike recent years, he gets hurt and kind of disappears from the story. That's also because St. Louis doesn't come back to play him regularly, where Boston just plugs him back in, lets him go. And he's been very, very effective. His career BABIPs are his last three-year average, 316. This year, 330. So a little bit of a jump. That's fair. The Green Monster might play into that a little bit. Mm-hmm. 20% home run to fly balls up to 28% home run to fly ball. Again, Green Monster might play into that a little bit. But all things considered, O'Neill's having a great year, and I believe he's going to be stuck in Boston for a little bit longer. So this is a younger player. Can we believe this kind of – because it's not like a massive jump compared to some of these other guys. So is this somewhat more believable?
I think so, and I think you bring up and something we haven't talked about yet, but I thought you think you bring up a good point. See, I'm all about compliments tonight.
I know. I don't know what's in that cup right now, but gosh, I am appreciating it. Or whatever lozenge you got going on, like something's working.
I didn't watch the debate, so I'm in a nice, jovial mood here, so I'm very complimentary. But one of the factors that BABIP and homer to fly ball are subject to is ballparks. Right. So like, for example, Coors Field is by far the best BABIP ballpark in baseball. It's so spacious. Hits just fall in or balls just fall in for hits. So ballpark has a major impact on some of these things. So if you look at someone like Tyler O'Neill, who has moved to a hitter friendly park in Boston, I think you can kind of bake some of that in and say he's not going to fall back as much as we might think. So great year for Tyler O'Neill. I think even more so impressive that he's doing this while not being 100%. I don't know if we can ever expect Tyler O'Neill to be 100%, but it's good to know that he can kind of play through and play around some injuries and still do what he's doing. So I think we all knew a change of scenery is what Tyler O'Neill needed to get out of St. Louis last year. And we're seeing that. I think this is one of those where like the context factors here are big for Tyler O'Neill in terms of him kind of keeping this up in 2025.
Yep. I think it was definitely something that was needed. And
free agent after the season.
Oh, he is. Okay. That'll be interesting then. Stay away from San Francisco, please. Stay away from camp. I'd like to see him go stay in Boston, honestly, but story of our lives, seeing another Cardinals prospect outfielder leave and succeed. Shocker. Stop us if we've seen that one before. Jesse Winker, this is a fun one. Went from 286 average BABIP to 316. I was looking up what he's done with just the Mets. His Mets BABIP's 319, so it's not like he had a massive difference from team to team. 13% home run to fly ball average, 15% home run to fly ball on the season. That has dropped a bit down to 12.5% with the Mets, so he had more power with Washington, and the ball does fly out of Washington better than the Mets per se. But what's your thoughts here on Winker? Because I think we all just kind of like look at this season and go, what is going on?
What the hell? Because, yeah. I mean, honestly, the biggest, by far the biggest surprise with Jesse Winker's season is not on this Bloom Board.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Three career stolen bases for Jesse Winker entering the season. His age 31 season steals 14. What do we do with that for next year? Like, A, how is that possible? And B, 10 bags? Does he repeat 15? Does he go back to 5? Does he use 0 like he had for most of his career? Jesse Winker is going to be an extremely tough projection for me. Haven't dove deep into him yet, but it's pretty wild what he's been able to do this season.
Well, and when looking at Winker real quick, let me pull his page back up here. But yeah, he's a free agent after this year to top it off. Yeah. So
he'll get paid.
He's going to get paid, but now I got to figure out where he's going to make the matters even worse. Because, you know, he might not take the best spot for his best interest. He might go for the best spot that gets paid the most money. So you got that going for you as well.
Yep.
Brendan Rodgers. This is one I've been a Brendan Rodgers fan for a while. It's been more health and whatnot with Brendan Rodgers, but he's hitting once again this year. The BABIP's up to 341, which is a big jump. Average is 314. Home run to fly ball has gone from 13 to 15%. He's even stole his first career base this year, which is fun if you really want to go that direction. But I don't know. I think Rodgers, he's always had good hit tools, even coming through the minors, just never been able to stay healthy.
Yeah, agreed. I don't know. I don't think much different of Brendan Rodgers than I did before. He's just kind of like a dude who plays. Even with this good year, it's only 13 homers, 274 batting average, but that's, you know, it's serviceable. And Brendan Rodgers plays every day, and that is useful in deeper leagues. So I definitely think this is someone like in 15 teamers or drafting holds you want, but in the shallower formats where you've got better replacement value, I'm not that excited for Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah, no, he's usually just a middle infield target for me because he goes so late in drafts. He's not a focal point of he's probably more of a DC pick type situation. I'm not looking for him in a redraft for sure. So I'm with you on that. Luis Garcia Jr. of the Washington Nationals. He's been showing up on a few discussions of late as he's having a really solid season, and all these boards and everything are starting to showcase the talent that Luis Garcia has brought to the table here. You know, his career, his last three averaged BABIPs 299 up to 317 this year. I believe that actually. Home run to fly ball has gone from 10% to 13%. It's a minor jump, honestly. When you look at a guy like Luis Garcia and you see a 24-year-old might have more power than that type thing. Like, we might have seen it all yet. So I'm a full supporter of what we've seen, and I think there might be a little more. If not, this is a great floor for Luis Garcia Jr.
Yeah, Garcia was one of the ones that was surprising to me in the 2025 early draft. Rob DiPietro took Luis Garcia, I want to say sixth round, something like that. And at first I was like, huh. But yeah, this is especially given the age, Luis Garcia, 24 years old. Its strikeout rate looks good. League average power running. You have to like that. The only kind of thing with Garcia is, can he hit lefties? Over Garcia's career, he's got a 612 OPS, so that's not too bad. I wonder about a platoon, which is kind of what he's been in, although he's been playing more regularly lately, so maybe that's not too much of a concern. So I don't know. Luis Garcia is a tough one for me, especially at second base. As we saw in 2025, it looks yet again to be a rough position. It's going to be hard to kind of judge how much of the step forward is sustainable, but at 24 years old, like, certainly the entire thing could be.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in what we got with here, and you'd hope the Nats are smart enough to not platoon him going forward. I don't know why they did to begin with, but
we'll see. Yeah,
it made no sense to begin with, but we'll have to see on that one.
Real quick,
last one we have. Yeah,
sorry, just not to cut you off. Kevin Hastings in the chat. All of Jesse Winker's stolen bases. This is a great point. Came with Washington, who is our greenest light team of any in Major League Baseball. Zero attempts in 34 games with the Mets. So that's a great pull, Kevin.
All right, the last, I guess, quote unquote overachiever that we have so far. Not a whole lot of explanation needed here. I had double donged on Tuesday, actually. So these numbers might be higher if we really want to look at things. That's when Christian Walker, who also was hurt for part of the season, still putting up elite numbers for his normal average by standards. Average 272, BABIP up to 293 this year. 15% home run to fly ball, only 16%. He's got 25 dongs on the year. I don't see any faults here.
And this might be a fault of the board here trying to go too far down, because Christian Walker, this is certainly within the range of outcomes. Like, a 20-point jump in BABIP is nothing. A 1% jump in homer to fly ball. Like, Christian Walker is, you know, as you're smiling here, he's no Paul Goldschmidt, but certainly another awesome year for Christian Walker, who, like you said, double dong tonight. So that 16% homer to fly is going to fly even higher. And a beer will be, or a noon, whatever your drink of choice in Arizona, will be consumed on my tab because of Christian Walker. So congratulations.
Yeah, it's going to be fun because you're smoking me with like the O'Neill Cruz, Bichette Bet, and a couple others. I'm smoking you in a couple, and we have a couple tight ones.
Oh, we'll do a full. We will do a full. We have a whole off season, so we will probably do a whole freaking show.
Oh yeah,
kind of recapping some of that stuff. So, and yeah, we'll see how it all shakes out.
For sure. All right, let's go to the underachievers, underperformers on this list here, and we'll start with Nick Castellanos, who, honestly, it's been just a rough go in general in the last couple, like very inconsistent the last few years with Nick Castellanos. Average BABIP at 335 down to 285 this year. Home run to fly balls dropped from 16% to 12%. He's got 19 homers, which is good. Still, you know, getting close to that 20 home run mark. But hitting 245, which is the lowest, you know, 225 in 2020. But other than that, this is the lowest of his career. Lowest full season batting average for Nick Castellanos. And it's been a massive just poo-poo season. I've been off of him for a while. I think I've just sit him in my DCs. I haven't even started him in a while. So what's your thoughts on Nick Castellanos? It's been a rough go.
Somewhat related. I was watching my Virginia Tech Hokies play on Saturday. And none other than Tom Brenneman is calling the game.
Oh, Jesus.
For the CW sports. So he's back calling college
football. I was about to say, he got hired by someone? Wow.
Yeah, Tom Brenneman, the Nick Castellanos commentator, is calling ACC football games on the CW this year. And there's actually a chance, this is total sidebars, but Boston College, who's in the ACC, their quarterback is a Castellanos. So there is a legitimate chance that Tom Brenneman calls a game with Castellanos
under center. That would be amazing.
This season. So,
he throws a deep pass down the sideline. No, yeah,
exactly. So just keep an eye out for that, for this extremely niche part of the
amazing
social media scene. But yes, Tom Brenneman is back. But anyway, Nick Castellanos. Yes. So, the point I want to make here with Castellanos is it's been up and down. We've seen this before, kind of like what you said. I could go back to the 2022 season with Nick Castellanos, had an even worse season than he's having now. 13 home runs and 558 plate appearances for Castellanos, only hit 263. And we could have had the same exact conversation 2 years ago, right? So the following year, Castellanos follows that up with a 272 batting average, 29 homers last year and 11 steals. And then this season, it's right back down. So who's to say Nick Castellanos can't snap right back to being that 2022 guy? Yes, he's going to be 2 years older. There is that, but I don't think he's like super old. I don't have his player page in front of me. I think I want to say he's like 33. So I'm not overly worried of that. I think this is someone, yeah, he'll be age 33 next season. I think this is someone you take a rebound shot on depending what the price is. I'm pretty sure Castellanos didn't go in the first 11 rounds of our draft. So if you're waiting on outfield and that seems to be a decent strategy early in 2025, I think this is a decent rebound play. A, he's done it before, and B, he's got the better, you know, stat baseline over the last three seasons than what we've seen in 2024.
Yeah, no, like I think it feels like we say this every couple of years with Castellanos. Just keep buying in, keep buying in, and hope for the value in the draft. And I guess if he's cheap enough, what's it hurt? We know what the ceiling can be with him. It's just been another frustrating year because he's in a good team. Like, because one thing was Detroit, okay, bad ballpark, bad team. He's in freaking Philadelphia with a loaded offense, and it's just been abysmal, to say the least. Randy Rosarena, I want to talk abysmal. Going to be 2020 this year, but he's hitting 221. BABIP has gone from 332, he's been above 300 every season of his career, down to 272, and he's seen his home run and fly ball go to 15 to 13%. I'm perplexed. Like, he had a stretch there where he looked like he was figuring it out. Then it disappeared again, Ryan. Absolutely baffling what Randy Rosarena is doing right now.
Baffling this Pete Crow Armstrong catch to end the game over the wall. Dodgers, absolutely nuts. While I'm talking, you can see it since I'm a little bit ahead of you.
Yeah.
Randy Rosarena, the
couldn't this is happen like to a better batter, anyways.
Who, your boy Muncy?
Dude, that's his third good catch in like four innings.
Fan trying to get it from him too.
He made another one while we were on the show already. It's like, dude's insane out there. Sorry.
He's awesome. Yeah. So this is Randy Arozarena is interesting. And again, full disclosure, I drafted Randy Arozarena in the early seventh round of our 2025 draft. This is a guy who consistently has been a third round pick in 15 team leagues. And really that was the impetus for me taking him in the seventh, is this is a guy who's still in his 20s, still young, has that baseline of better performance. And so this is like, to me, a slam dunk in terms of someone who's going to improve next season. The one thing that I worry about is the park. Hitting in Seattle is absolutely brutal. Maybe I should have thought of that when I picked Randy Arozarena. But I think staying in Seattle, and he will be in Seattle for at least a couple more seasons, Randy Arozarena staying in that park may wash out some, I don't think all, but may wash out some of that positive regression that's coming his way. Because I do think Randy Arozarena, this is just a bad year for him. It happens. This is a guy, like I just said, who's young enough to turn this around and has been much better every single season before 2024. So from that aspect, I like the turnaround. It's just I hope the park doesn't wash it away too much.
So you know what's fun? It's the old story. Not all 2020 seasons are created equal. Most 2020, 30-30 guys have, you know, great batting averages and everything. You got Randy hitting 220, 19 and 20 should get to 2020 and hope for, should, but the way he's hitting, maybe not. Like, that might not happen.
Yeah.
Zach Gilloff hit his 17th home run on Tuesday. That's who I was thinking. He's 17-22. So, like, when I saw it come through, and I'm thinking, I got to bring this up on the show, because it's like we're looking at these two dudes that might both go 2020. You and I both talk about it during draft. And again, like, I'm trying not to go 2025, but it dawned on me watching this. And we both talk about how we like to have, you know, the solid floor of, you know, the stolen base guys as we keep drafting. Well, these are 20 plus stolen base guys every year, regardless if they hit or not. And that's just like, oh, it's another one of those full tilt moments come draft day.
Well, and like, so I have the on Fangraph's shiny new page here.
I got to customize that. That is amazing.
It is sick. It is. You need to be a Fangraphs member, which everyone should be. You can kind of customize this with some new tools. One of the things, like a player card of the player raider. So I just pull up Randy Arozarena. It's right there. Even with this awful, terrible, no good season from Randy Arozarena, still a top 40 outfielder. I mean, that's pretty good. You know, it's not great, but for how bad Randy Arozarena has been this year, I think a lot of that is, like you were saying, Bubba, the stolen base is booing that value. If you're taking a top 40 outfielder and that's his floor value, I kind of like that.
Yeah, 12-team, 5 outfielder leagues, that's 60 starting outfielders. So he's a starting outfielder in a 12-team league.
Oh,
that's
absolutely. Like, yep. So it's just, At his worst.
At his worst, yeah. And if people have listened to any of my content long enough, this show, other shows, they know my love for Randy. So I got plenty on my teams this year. Plenty of 221 batting average on my rosters. So I don't think they haven't lived and died with that one. Adelis Garcia. I remember coming into draft season, it's like, do you take Randy or Adelis? What are we going to do here? They seemed very similar, kind of yin and yang type situation. Well, Adelis has seen his BABIP go from 299 average to 262, the lowest of his career. And he's seen his home run to fly ball go from 19 to 14%. It's been abysmal. He's got the power, a little bit of speed, lower batting average than Randy. I just bench Adelis now. I haven't dropped him yet because I haven't needed to drop him, but it's been a rough go for Mr. Garcia.
It has. I am on the rebound train, though. This is a guy that the strikeout rate is the same as it's been in the last two seasons, 28% in 2022 and 23, 27% this year. Yes, he does strike out a lot, but this is a guy who consistently has close to a 300 BABIP, and that's cratered at 262. I mean, that has to go back up. Like, odds are that will go back up. And then you look at the power department. This is someone, the hard contact is still there for Adelis Garcia. He's got 48 barrels, only 22 home runs on those 48 barrels. So I think the skills are there. You're banking on someone who is coming off very low BABIP and homer to fly ball. I think those come back. And I think Adelis Garcia will also get you double-digit stolen bases. So yep. I think Adelis Garcia, just like Randy Arozarena, maybe even more so, because I think he will still be in Texas next year. We need to brush up on our free agents. That'll happen over the offseason. Yeah. But
he will be. He had a contract extension, 2 years, $14 million. It says through 2020. No, he's not a free agent until 2027. So you're good.
Cool. This is also someone along the line of Randy Arozarena per Fangraphs' player rater, the number 41 outfielder in 2024. Again, at his worst. So,
yeah, his worst.
And maybe, I mean, maybe it's not as like Ardelis is a couple years older than Randy Arozarena. Maybe this is an start of an age related decline. I think it's more likely that we see some positive bounce back from Ardelis Garcia. I'm starting to get it mixed up again, but
it's like draft season all over again. It's what we do with these guys. They are the yin and the yang to each other. Xander Bogaerts. This is a fun one. And I think my easiest answer, he's hurt. That's just the easy. He wasn't even when he got hurt, he wasn't supposed to come back this year with a shoulder injury. Came back like a month later. His normal BABIP 337 down to 299. He's hitting 266 on the year. The dude's low is usually 285. More often than not, hits 300. That's what Xander does. Powers down even for Xander standards. Like, I'm back on track next year with him. I hope he comes at a discount because I'm usually the Mr. Anti-Xander Bogaerts. I picked him up in Fab. I was pretty proud of that earlier in the season. But if he comes at a discount as a middle infield option, I'm aboard that train.
Agreed. And we're starting to see actually a turnaround over the last month. Xander's got four homers, hitting 264 steals, just kind of a boon for folks who picked him up in Fab when dropped. So, yes, agree. This is probably injury induced for Xander Bogaerts. The counterpoint to that is, like, it seems like the guy's playing hurt every year, which is fair.
That's true. That's true.
Which is fair, but I think he's older than he actually is, but he's age 32 season next year. He's not that old. I think Xander is a pretty good bounce back candidate next season. So it's again along the lines of Randy Arozarena, Ardelis Garcia. You're just buying these guys at low value with better track records than they've shown.
Buy the dip, folks. Buy the dip. Rhys Hoskins down from his normal 283 to 235 BABIP, barely hitting over 200 this season. But he does have 23 home runs, home run to fly balls dropped from 18 to 16%. You know, missed most of 2023, new home in 2024. I want to give him the grain of salt on this one, but what's your thoughts on Rhys Hoskins?
I do too. I just said this is probably of anyone we talk about tonight, this is probably the shakiest in terms of like confidence that we would have in someone's baseline just because Rhys Hoskins has missed so much time over the last three seasons. We don't really know what his baseline is. But yeah, if you look at these numbers, you would think Rhys Hoskins jumps back to being like a 240-ish hitter with 30 home run power. I mean, that's the guy who he was pre-injury. The injury does add context to this and say maybe this isn't going to be the same guy that we saw before. But I don't know. And I also think like Hoskins playing time should be there, but like this is kind of a commodity at first base, one of those low batting average, decent power guys. There's a lot of those guys, I think, late in first at first base.
Yep, I'm with you there. He's going to fall quite a bit on this one. Austin Riley, I'm just going to keep this simple. Dude was starting to crush before he got back.
Zero concern really for me, Austin Riley. And it kind of cemented when James Anderson took Austin Riley third round, I want to say, of our 2025 draft. Austin Riley is coming back, people.
Yeah, don't be too worried about that one. Leody Tavares, this is a fun one. Normal BABIP, average BABIP 312 down to 270 this year. Home run a fly ball 9-7%. Not usually too worried about that one, but you know, last few years 318 or above in the BABIP department. It keeps him hitting 260 or above. Got the drop off kind of closer to what he was doing the first couple years in the bigs. So what are we thinking here on Tavares? Still only 25. It feels like he's been around forever.
Yeah. Yeah. That does seem quite young. I don't know. I mean, I think that Leody Tavares has, we have 900 plate appearances of him being a 260 hitter in 2022 and 2023. He's got the same exact K rate that we saw last season, which is pretty good, 21%. This is, you know, it's BABIP. This is a extremely low BABIP for Leody Tavares. And you would think that that comes around. Now, a few more fly balls this year for Leody Tavares. And so that is something I guess we haven't talked about either. Like, BABIP does depend on ground ball, fly ball, right? Your fly balls hardly ever drop in for hits compared to ground balls and certainly line drives. So your fly ball guys are tending to run lower BABIPs. But even still, Leody Taveras is just a 40% fly ball rate. It's not someone like trying to sell out for power. So I think a modest rebound is in store for Leody. And again, this is someone who went 14-14 last year with everyday playing time in Texas, 130 runs plus RBI and at 266. Nothing great, but like I feel like this is like your fifth outfielder, and even in 15 teamers, and you know, serviceable. He hasn't been playing against lefties lately, which I'm a little concerned about for next year, but we'll worry about that later.
Yep, I'm with you on that one. In deeper formats, Leody is very, very serviceable, so there's no denying that one. Josh Rojas had a great year last year. His last 3 years have been pretty serviceable as well, hitting over BABIP over 300, but 245, 269, 264. Average BABIP of 329 for Josh Rojas. Down to 288 this year, which has been a massive drop off. I said he's, you know, playing time wise, actually second most games in his career right now for Seattle at 127, which is crazy to think about.
Thank you, 2024 Seattle Mariners.
Yeah, that just sums it up. And he's 30 too. Like, see, the OD 25, Rojas 30. That's just hilarious to me. What's your thoughts on Josh Rojas? Because I don't know who the heck he is.
Yeah, and I don't. Yeah.
Who cares? He's a fab guy. You're not drafting Josh Rojas this year in the deepest of AL formats.
You covered it. You just nailed it. I don't think that. I don't know. There's nothing like super exciting here. He's never really had any pop. He has made contact, so yes, I don't think he's a 228 hitter or whatever that he's been this year. But I also don't think Josh Rojas is anything over like a 260 hitter with maybe 10 homers, and like the speed helps. But yeah, streamer, and that's about it.
All right, now we've talked Rosarena. We've talked Adelise. A guy that's put up similar numbers of late and even this season is George Springer, who has 19 homers, 14 steals, a 221 average. Average BABIP's been 288 down to 242 this season. Home run to fly ball is about the same, 16 to 15%, and that's why the power is almost in line with the last three seasons. But the batting average is a big drop from your 260 to 265 type guy. Pretty much a BABIP-induced thing. Is this something you're ready to buy back in on? Because George Springer will be 35 next season.
That's the only thing is the age. He's starting to become an old George Springer. But that's like the only thing. Like the power is actually up for George Springer this year. The strikeout rate is pretty much right where it's been the last two seasons. He's not a 220 hitter. He's 260. That's who he's been for quite a while now. And I think George Springer, health and age be damned, can snap right back to being that same guy, which is, yeah, like 260 hitter with, again, this guy is close to doing another 2020 season, would be a second in a row. So I like George Springer. I don't think the ceiling's super high. I also wonder, like, will he continue to lead off all the time next year? And even this year he has not been. So that's gonna put a bite into Springer's counting stats as a compiler. But I don't know, as long as he, you know, doesn't become too old this offseason, he'll be useful.
Yeah, we'll see how that one works out there. Stay up there in Canada, I guess, and stay cool and ice down, take those cold plunges and stay healthy.
Stay sharp.
Or whatever they do. All right, last one we have on the list here, Andrés Giménez. This one's fun because BABIP's dropped from 312 to 285, the average BABIP of 312. But he's hitting 252. Last year, he hit 251. Similar to BABIP. This might be who he is, folks. He hit 273 BABIP in 2021. So this number might be skewed from 2022. So I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
The crazier part, the 11% average home run to fly ball dropped to 6%. The power has completely disappeared. Like 27 steals is great, but 8 home runs. We were hoping for like a 15-20, the 15-30 like we saw the year before. Like the batting average wouldn't matter if the power was there. Power has disappeared, Ryan. But again, 25 years old. I think this is a discount in the making with Andrés Giménez.
This is the tough calls, I mean, that we have to make every offseason is like, yes, the power has disappeared for Andrés Giménez, but you just mentioned the age. Like, it should come back to what it's been. And Andrés Giménez, you know, you mentioned the home run totals, but the barrels have been there. 24 barrels 2 years ago, 25 last year, but just 13 this year. So this is always the hardest ones for me to project, is someone who has a baseline of better performance, but B, not only has it dipped this year, but like the skills have gone away too. The skills can vary just like surface stats can. So like, you know, a low barrel rate for Andrés Giménez may not be a super worry because it's been twice as much over the last two seasons. But it's just, this is always the toughest projection for me. Someone like in their prime where something just goes totally south. What's that next step? It's why we play the game. Why we play the game we love.
And it's a fun Cleveland offense. Still a young team. Yeah. That should be kind of like Quan will be there. J-Ram's going to be there. Naylor's both will be there. Like there's a lot going on in that offense that should support Andres Jimenez to either return to glory or hit eighth and still score like 80 runs probably. So the other thing there's a lot of options there.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing with Jimenez too, like truly cannot hit lefties.
Yeah, he was platooning a lot.
He has a 264 OBP against lefties this season with, I think, one walk in 163 plate appearances, maybe two walks. That is abysmal. But again, going back to like baseline, that 264 OBP against lefties this year, last year was 328. The year before was 402. So like he hasn't been able to hit lefties this season, but he has been in the past. It's just he's confusing, man. And exactly. And just 25. Like, I don't know. He's a tough one.
Yeah. I think it's one of those that the ceiling is very nice. The floor looks like we might be seeing it this year type thing. And is that something you're willing to invest in with Andres Jimenez? So yeah. Michael C nails this one. Lots of Jimenez Stott parallels. Stott was great last year. This year struggled and platooned as well through at times this season. So he's been a tough one also. Real quick, just saw Ronaldo Lopez update on the TV as we were talking there. Initial test came back clean. He's day-to-day, but we'll have an MRI on Wednesday when they get to Atlanta. So buckle up for that one, folks.
I wonder what the initial test was if they haven't done the MRI yet.
That's what I was thinking. It's a shoulder issue. What's the initial test? Did you feel for something? Like, are you Oz the Mentalist? Or what do we got going on here? I'm sorry, but he said he felt good. Tess, like, yeah, of course he felt good. He's a player. They lie, I've been told. Just keep that in mind.
Oz the Mentalist. Oh, my God.
Yes. All right. Any final thoughts on this Bloom board? It was a fun one. Some interesting names. Stuff to get the mind going for 2025 for sure.
Yeah, stuff to get the mind going. And I think, I'll probably preach this all off season. We emphasize last season, I think, way too much. I think there is value to be had in looking at the last three seasons and kind of doing an exercise similar to this, because players can have really good years and have really bad years. And more often than not, they kind of just come back to the player they are. And that variance kind of works itself out over multiple seasons. So I don't know. Yeah, nice little exercise as we wind down these last couple weeks of the 2024 season.
Most definitely. All right, got a couple listener questions here on the old Twitter here. Stephen Crawford, who's also in the chat tonight, says, I know you and Ryan focus on some deep league competitive leagues. However, as a shallow Yahoo League manager, you guys helped me to a first place finish. Great tips for the season on guys like Ringifo, Lawrence Butler, Xavier Edwards, Elliot Ramos. I'll keep watching, but thanks for a great year.
No, that's awesome to hear. Thank you, Stephen, for listening, being active in the chat throughout. And it's good to hear that, because I think you're in a 10-team league, and that's something that I need to speak for Bubba, that we try and really work on is to not just talk. I know I play mostly 15s. Bubba, you play mostly 12s, but we're trying to kind of cater to that non-high stakes, the more kind of casual, common player. We cover everything, but we try to not pigeonhole ourselves into just that NFBC environment. We try. Sometimes it's hard because the data that we all pull from and whatnot is from NFBC. But no, that's really good to hear, Steve. And I mean, another example of that, like we pull the CBS, most added guys every week on our Thursday show. That's just an example of that kind of stuff. So great to hear that.
Yep. Awesome stuff as usual. And then our buddy Ben Tidd has a question, Ryan. This is for you because Ben and I were texting about this tonight. Ryan, Bubba and I have been unable to crack the code for figuring out when to start or sit Albert Suarez. So if you could help us out, we'd appreciate it. Suarez got shelled by the White Sox last week, destroys the Red Sox on Tuesday night. So thanks, and tell us why we shouldn't start him in a two-step next week.
Well, A, you definitely should. Suarez two-step is your Giants and then the Tigers. B, I don't know if I'm the right one to ask because rotation mate to Albert Suarez, Cade Povich was the opposite whipsaw. And that I'm on team Povich. So I had Povich last week for the gem, the 10 strikeouts against the White Sox. And then, as we talked about on our Thursday Fab show, the White Sox have been so bad lately, especially against lefties. And Povich looked so good and then got destroyed. Maybe not destroyed, but did not pitch well against the Red Sox this week. So I don't know, man. You throw up your hands, call it September, and go back to that well with the two-step for Albert Suarez next week. Best of luck, fellas.
Yep, it's kind of been the way of the world of late. Pitchers that should be doing good don't do good, vice versa. It's fun. So, normal September vibes going around here. A couple weeks to keep grinding along.
Yep.
Final thoughts, Ryan, as we wrap up another episode of Bubba the Bloom. We'll be back Thursday night to get the penultimate Fab preview. Yeah, you didn't think you're seeing that word, hearing that word tonight, did you? From this guy. Yeah, so we got that coming to you guys. Week 26 Fab preview Thursday. But final thoughts for tonight?
I don't think I have any. The Thursday show will be, yes, will be penultimate. It will be shortly after our two football teams do battle.
After Buffalo crushes the Dolphins like they usually do.
Me as a Bills fan and you as a Dolphins fan, that game will be over. Maybe like in the fourth quarter when we get going. So that'll be, I don't know, I don't care that much, but it'll be fun.
It'll be over, that's for sure.
I think the Dolphins are favored. I don't know why you have this defeatist attitude.
I don't think A-Chan's playing, so we'll see.
Whatever. All right. Yeah, that's all I got. I don't want to talk about football.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that'll do it. We'll be back with you guys on Thursday to, again, Fab preview as usual. Two more weeks of Fab to go here. Keep fighting for the finish line. Get those titles. Thanks for an awesome chat as usual, guys. And we'll see you next episode on Thursday. But until then, check out Ryan on the Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I am at BD Entrick. Until next time, this was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 168. Catch y'all later.